Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Cage podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. Joining me for this episode is my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the CW Arrowverse Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover. We've already done one episode covering the first three parts. In this episode, we're going to cover parts 4 and 5. Now, since it had been a few weeks, we had the time. We figured, let's go ahead and rewatch the first three parts in rapid succession. Rolled right into the fourth, and we've only watched that part, which is Arrow.
Well, and I think rewatching the first three parts helped for multiple reasons. It helped in terms of freshen our mind.
Get back into the story, absolutely.
It also meant I felt less guilty talking to you during the first three parts and saying things like, this means we're in Flash time, right?
Yes, there were one or two things I did, I think, miss the first time around. There's a lot going on.
There really is. And there were a couple times where when we were watching it the second time, we were able to say, okay, wait, let's count the characters in the scene, because it feels like, and maybe it was just filming schedules, etc., but like Kate Kane comes to mind, as it felt like, shouldn't she be in the scene when Ollie dies?
Yeah, when Ollie dies, she's nowhere to be found. There's a couple of things where it's easy to lose track of where a couple of characters are. Now, part of it is there were so many characters in this.
There were, and when you consider that the casts of definitely four shows, depending if you want to count Legends of Tomorrow, because with them being the fifth episode, I don't know how fully engaged in the crossover some people feel they are.
Well, technically, part 5, which we have not watched yet, we're going to do that shortly, is episode 0 of season 5 of Legends.
See, and that's what I'm thinking.
Which is just kind of weird.
But that's why I'm thinking, you know, it's hard to say, you know, like in this Arrow episode, we didn't have Diggle.
Yeah, we did.
Did we?
The post-death scene or whatever with Katie Cassidy over...
Oh, that's true. In the flashback-ish memory.
Part of this is so much goes on. It's easy to lose track of stuff. Because where we start this episode is we've got the 7 Paragons minus one who got replaced, stuck at the vanishing point.
Mm-hmm.
And the Superman, who's the Paragon of Truth, that was the Man of Steel. The Man of Steel? Which was the Brandon Routh? It was the Brandon Routh Superman from whichever movie it was, taking, you know, all that. He gets replaced by the Supergirl Lex Luthor.
And as you interestingly pointed out, he used the Book of Destiny to literally replace Superman as the Paragon of Truth.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, well into the episode, he basically dares somebody to ask him a question outright, and when they do, he gives an honest answer.
It wasn't so much that he dared them, it's like you could just ask. But I think they could have reworked that dialogue to give a sense of, it's not like I'm going to lie to you.
Mm.
And set the stage for he's the Paragon of Truth, because that plays in at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
They need these paragons to kind of relight those aspects of the universe.
Yeah.
And I'm curious how much of those 7 paragons, those attributes, could possibly play into the emotional spectrum of the Green Lantern Corps.
Oh, that's interesting.
Love is certainly one of them, but the others don't really fall quite in line. It's the same number.
Yeah.
And it was interesting, and the reason I mentioned the Green Lantern Corps is part of this episode, we get the backstory on the Monitor and how he was a scientist on Multus who, you know, basically kicked everything off inadvertently.
And referred to someone else as the Monitor.
Yes. The person who was monitoring the experiment. Now, what's interesting is those scenes are very similar to what was seen in the comic book Crisis, and granted, co-writer of this episode was Marv Wolfman, writer of the original Crisis. The difference was, it was Crona who had done that part and had seen the unseeable, and it was sacrilege to go back and view the dawn of time, for obvious reasons, as we see in the story, doesn't work out well. So to have that essentially be the origin of the Monitor in this world, I thought was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a number of things that throughout this crossover, certainly in this episode, are harkened back to what had happened in the comics, but in different ways. You know, the battle at the dawn of time against the anti-monitor and stuff like that definitely was in the comics. Obviously, it plays out differently here. Didn't have the concept of the Paragons in the comics. We have them here. The whole bit of spending time in the Speed Force didn't happen because by that point, Barry Allen had died in the comics. Supergirl had died in Crisis, I believe, both by this point. Because this would have been post-issue 8 where one of those deaths happened. I forget which was when. But also, the whole Speed Force didn't exist in the comics back then.
Mm-hmm.
That was a later invention. So I liked how they were paying tribute to and staying along the kind of the basic plot line, but adapting it and making it work for what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And using Oliver as the Spectre completely, you know, they'd set that up in the third part, so it's not completely unexpected. But prior to watching any of Crisis, hadn't seen that coming. And his powers and abilities here are different than they are in the comics, but it makes sense. And you can see the similarities, you know, conceptually. So I thought that was pretty cool. And they spent a lot of time basically just kind of, again, getting some of that backstory for how things happened and putting the characters where they needed to be to restart the universe.
But they're still at the dawn of time.
The way it flashed white there at the end.
Okay.
I'm not so sure.
Interesting.
The very final bit there was a little ambiguous to me.
Okay.
Because it could have just as easily been Barry could have grabbed them, they could have ran somewhere, but I didn't think that's what had happened. So I don't know what happens, where the fifth part picks up.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that question, definitely. I also liked how when they were kind of stuck in the Speed Force and they had to find each other, it was, you know, where were the connections made and stuff. And we get back to various key moments in some of the past crossovers, specifically the Elseworlds one from last year and the Invasion one from a few years ago. So I thought those were well used. A little harder to get Batwoman into one of those flashbacks because, well, she had only been in one crossover.
Yeah, but hers was actually in some respects better used because it was, yeah, this isn't my memory, but this is a moment I can learn from.
Mm-hmm. I can see the parallels and I mm-hmm. can... Well, and it also showed the people don't trust, but they forge the alliance over time.
Yeah.
Aspect, which was a common theme across many of those scenes. So I thought that was well done. There was a lot, I think, happening in here. It felt like a fairly full episode, but it also had a little bit of almost clip show-itis.
Yes.
And it wasn't a clip show, but there was enough flashbacks harkening into memories and things like that. And you had commented at one point when we were watching it how there was a scene when they had tied into the Elseworlds one from last year where we got a shot of Barry, a shot of Ollie back and forth. And you're like, we're getting a lot of one-shots. Could they not coordinate schedules?
Yeah.
Which is entirely possible because, again, the number of characters that were in here was just staggering.
Mm-hmm.
The one that surprised the hell out of me, and I did not see this coming, and I thought it was a really cool touch, was when we got the movie Flash.
Yeah.
And it took me a minute. It's like, I think that's who that is. And part of why he was hard to recognize is even though that actor was cast as the movie Flash like 2 days after the Flash TV show started, the screen time he had in this episode, which is maybe a minute or two, is a meaningful percentage of that actor's time on screen as the Flash.
Mm-hmm.
Because other than the Justice League film, we got a fraction of, maybe a minute. We probably got as much time in Batman v Superman for him as the Flash as we got in this episode.
Yeah.
And having those two kind of face off or whatever was a nice moment.
Mm-hmm.
And goes towards that bigger picture of a multiverse here.
Mm-hmm.
So I did not expect that at all, and it was a nice moment to have. How they seem to have kept that pretty much under wraps, don't know, but kudos to them for doing that.
Yes.
And, I mean, I had been trying to avoid spoilers on this, but didn't feel I had to go to any kind of Herculean efforts. Now, granted, we're watching this, like, the day after it initially aired, but even then, there are a lot of times where some spoilers are almost unavoidable at times.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt them being picked as the Paragons makes sense now.
Yes, now.
Their time at the Vanishing Point seemed like a little bit of a waste of time, but it needed, you know, Ollie needed time in Purgatory to get trained, although Purgatory, does it have time?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Vanishing Point, though, was a nice callback for Legends.
Yes.
I'll give them that.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
It was also a little bit of a, let's kind of test Lex Luthor's mettle and see if he's only here because he was going to survive at any cost, even if that meant stealing somebody else's seat in the escape pod equivalent,
mm-hmm.
or if he's actually going to try and contribute, if he's going to pull his own weight,
yeah,
or if he's dead weight.
There was definitely he was trying to pull his own weight, but he had kind of nothing else to do with his time. I felt the way Barry had basically bounced forward in time in the Vanishing Point, which is outside of time, but it has time, trying to use the Speed Force. And meanwhile, everybody else had either been meditating or working out or, you know, whatever.
Let's not discuss food.
Yeah, apparently that was not really an issue. Neither were sleeping quarters, etc. But I don't expect them to have figured all of that out.
It's a magic place.
I guess. It's a shame none of it seemed to survive from the Legends.
Well, that describes many places the Legends go and encounter.
I did like how in the fight scene, Canary was basically commenting on how they usually mess things up for the better.
Yes.
You know, and that was a nice moment. So even though we mainly had the core seven plus Ollie, so eight, we get a number of other characters through the flashbacks and the Speed Force stuff and all of that. So even with this episode, which was the most bottled of them,
mm-hmm.
there's still just a ton of people they had to juggle to make this happen.
Yeah.
So I think they've been doing a really good job keeping the story moving.
Well, at this point, we've effectively dealt with crisis, it feels like, and now we need to go into repercussions.
Well, this gets us up to about the end of issue 10 or so of the original Crisis, which was 12 issues. And I'm trying to remember again, it's been a while since I've read it. There came a point where they kind of fixed everything, and then it was waking up in the new reality.
Yeah.
The Golden Age, Clark Kent going into the One Earth Daily Planet, you know, thinking he's the editor, going into Perry's office, and Perry's like, what the hell? And regular Clark comes in and, you know, introduces him as his uncle, you know, and of course they look just alike or whatever kind of a thing, give or take 20 years. So there's some of that aspect I expect to get in the Legends of Tomorrow episode, and also a resetting of the status quo. Because where this ended up with them kind of restarting the Big Bang or what have you, it implied singular universe. But that could have just been phrasing.
Yeah.
Whether we have a multiverse at the end of this, I'm still not sure yet.
Yeah, too soon to tell for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, because we haven't experienced that new reality yet.
Yeah.
You know, are we now in one world where Gotham, Freeland, National City, Star City, you know, Central City all are in the same planet or not? I don't know. And gut feeling is it wouldn't surprise me if they go that way. But they've also kind of dealt with the multiple Earths fine that I don't feel they have to go that way.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly with the introduction of the movie Flash, I feel they're better off leaving it as a multiverse.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
One more episode to find out.
Anything else we want to discuss on this, or do we just want to kind of get to that next one?
I'm ready for the next one.
Same here. This is one where they were airing them back to back, so I think they wanted them to be watched back to back. And this one felt fairly, I don't say self-contained, but like a complete chapter.
Yes.
Because we got from one stopping point to another stopping point, and now it's like, can they land the ending?
Yes.
And I'm hoping they can. I'm thinking they can. Let's find out.
Okay.
Okay, so we've just finished watching part 5 of Crisis on Infinite Earths, which was technically, I guess, episode 0 of season 5 of Legends of Tomorrow. And we had more legends than usual, but some of them just peripherally. This episode basically started with Kara Danvers, Supergirl, waking up in the new reality. So kind of sort of what I had expected, and they went, again, very similar to how it played out in the comic, where people woke up not realizing they were in a new world. In this case, they had basically collapsed Supergirl's world, Black Lightning's world, and the main Arrow Flash world into the same reality, which is kind of what I had expected. It opens up a lot of story opportunities for moving villains back and forth and stuff without any explanation, and just eases crossovers and cross-continuity and stuff. So that, again, didn't surprise me much. We got a little bit of another battle with the Anti-Monitor, which again harkens back to the comics.
We didn't get a whole lot beyond, okay, now we're on One Earth, and the new status quo of Lex Luthor and Lea Luthor, but beyond that, we don't really know the various shows' status quos moving forward.
Yeah, I think the changes to the status quo for Supergirl, Lex and Lena are now revered members of society.
And allies.
And it's going to be interesting, given how much they'd built up on the Lena doesn't trust. Is that still in play or not, or how does that all play out? The other big thing is the DEO is a member is a subsidiary of Luthor Corps.
Mm-hmm.
So the Luthors are now her boss in that respect. So I do think the next episode of Supergirl is going to have to be kind of a, you know, reset the status quo in this new world as to how does who relate to whom.
Yeah.
You know, how that all plays out. For the Arrowverse, or the Arrow team of characters, the big difference there, Ollie is presumed dead.
Mm-hmm.
John and Lila have a boy and a girl.
Yeah.
So, because I was wondering at what point, you know, it's like, do they have kids? Is it a boy or a girl? And it took you a second to realize I was referencing Flashpoint. Now they split the difference and they have both, which is cool. And again, feels like something Ollie would have done.
Mm-hmm.
To kind of reset things.
But we had no sign of William, no sign of Mia.
None whatsoever. So they are, it seems, relegated to the future. And now a future that could be very different.
Presumably.
Because there's no reason to think that things would have progressed down the line they did in terms of John's kid and stuff like that. Now with a sister to influence, could be different and such. And
very true.
What I've heard about the spinoff is it's going to be a brighter, nicer future.
Good.
So I expect, I know the next episode is Green Arrow and the Canaries, and I think it's going to kind of set the path for that. But really nothing else in terms of clear status quo change. We don't know if Laurel is alive. If so, which version of Laurel it is.
Agreed.
So that could go either way. They've spent more with the Earth 2 Laurel than the original, but who knows. For the Flash group, Nash is back. Everybody who was at the Dawn of Time kept their memories. Martian Manhunter was one of those, and he'd been going around, you know, reminding people telepathically, you know.
Doing a memory download to people he felt needed to know.
The core dump for their allies and stuff. So if at any point they decide to have forgotten one, they could have forgotten one, and oh, I'll tell you now, or what have you.
Well, and he seemed to do the abrupt and harsh version for Nash.
Yeah, everyone commented it gave them a splitting headache, which I can understand both because of the let's cram this into your brain real quickly, but also you've got conflicting memories now.
Yes.
Or, you know, this is what we know, this is what you know kind of thing. So it's a shame he didn't do almost the inverse of get a download from somebody of what the status quo was and give that to the other six.
Yes.
Other five, really, because I think they could do without Lex. And yeah, really, for the Flash ones, we didn't see any particular status quo change that I can think of other than Nash. Black Lightning now in the same world.
But we saw no indication, really, of what his family situation is. He simply said, the Martian came, gave me the download, I came to help.
Yeah, I'm expecting that storyline to continue without missing a beat, because they'd already been a walled-off city.
Mm.
So that's fine. No particular status quo change mentioned for Batwoman or Gotham. But again, that was effectively a walled-off city, if not literally.
Yeah.
And
though Kate was hanging out with the Danvers sisters at the end.
Yes.
Which is a very interesting... I mean, the Danvers sisters tend to accumulate female friends.
Mm-hmm.
But that was an interesting move to make.
Well, and again, goes back towards kind of the world's finest pairing of Batman and Superman. They've always treated Supergirl as the more preeminent one these days, even though Superman's been around. And part of it was her show.
Yeah.
Now, the one status quo change we got for Superman is now instead of one kid, he's got two.
Yes, I caught that.
And they might even be a little older. And they'd kind of set the scene for that of, in the first part, I wanted two kids.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And with there being a Superman and Lois show in the works, we're going to get more of that.
Yeah.
So it was interesting, again, how they merged the world. I think it simplifies a lot of future storytelling and stuff. The fighting again with the Anti-Monitor, it kind of made sense. You had to deal with him, but I could have gone either way on that. Surprised that Ryan Choi did not wind up with an Atom suit of his own at the end.
Mm.
He is the replacement Atom, but they could pull him back later for that.
But I did like not just going in and saving him when the stuff came back to attack, but his being useful in the final battle.
Mm-hmm. What was interesting is they never bothered to really show his wife.
Yeah.
Although she was in a photo in one of the parts. I did like how when Supergirl was having to face up with Weather Witch, daughter of Weather Wizard from The Flash, she's like, who are you? And this is how she's finding out on the same world. Flash shows up to help. And they're like, people recognize both of us. What's up? This is, again, how they're discovering it. And the guy who kind of walks up for an autograph or whatever is Marv Wolfman.
Nice, yeah.
Which is a nice cameo for him. He, of course, wrote Crisis on Infinite Earths, the comic, co-wrote part four of this. So nice to see him get kind of acknowledged there. Many of the fight scenes here took place at, you know, Perez Park or Gardner this, Port, or, you know, whatever it was. Again, just name-checking a lot of the key creators for iconic DC stuff. George Perez, of course, being the artist of Crisis on Infinite Earths. So overall, I think they did a pretty good job of getting the people from the Dawn of Time back into their lives and stuff. Again, very much how it played out in the comics in terms of they just wake up there the next day. Which, frankly, I'm not going to say was brilliant writing back then, but they could at least learn, oh, that's how it was in the comic, you know, here.
Yeah. I guess I was hoping for it to end with a little more indication how we were going to go back into the regular seasons, if that makes sense.
I was not expecting a whole lot of that. I think that's less crossover type stuff and would have made this a fairly full epilogue in and of itself. And I felt we got a little more than just the epilogue.
Okay.
We got enough of, okay, we know how the story sort of resolves, but for how it impacts each individual group, that's their show.
Okay.
And it was interesting when we got kind of the memorial scene there at the end that they reused the location, the X-Star Labs location they'd used from a few years back, which has the look of the Hall of Justice on the outside. What was really cool was how there was a animal noise, a monkey laughter kind of a thing. And when we finally get to the crate it had broken out of, now why that would be in there to begin with, don't know, but X-Star Labs, they'd experimented on monkeys before, obviously with Grodd. The name on it was Gleek, which is the Wonder Twins monkey. And we get the Super Friends music playing in full force as they cut to the outside. And what was nice is we also get the Justice League table, the chairs around it,
mm-hmm.
and seven members for the original, not that they used the term Justice League.
Yeah.
But that's classically what the Justice League had always started at.
Well, and we had the Arrow's suit there, mm-hmm. representing Arrow, and we basically had the lead superhero for each show and Martian Manhunter.
We had Supergirl, Superman, Black Lightning, Flash, Canary, Batwoman, and Martian Manhunter. So most of them were either original Justice Leaguers back in the day and or kind of the lead of their show. And there was a spot for Ollie, too.
Yeah.
So in the original Justice League, members not represented would be Aquaman, Wonder Woman, and Green Lantern. Batwoman in place of Batman, Supergirl and Superman in place of just Superman. Everybody else, more or less. Because Martian Manhunter would have been there, Canary would have been there, Black Lightning would not have been there.
Mm.
But again, don't have Aquaman, Wonder Woman, or
yeah.
Green Lantern. Which is a little interesting given they touched bits and pieces on the Green Lantern mythos.
Mm.
Now, they did basically merge this into an Earth Prime.
Yeah.
Again, same terminology that had been used kind of sort of at various points in DC continuity for different things. pre-Crisis Earth Prime in the comics was our world without heroes and such. And they've used different terms for emerged Earth in the comics sense and stuff. What I found interesting was after they go through all of that to establish it, we then get a voiceover with Ollie, which had been done by the Monitor at the beginning. And again, the dialogue was taken from Crisis at the beginning. And here it was very similar to, but adapted, saying we've got this one world, but we also have a multiverse. And then they cut to the Titans show on one world, the Doom Patrol show on a different world, a Swamp Thing on yet another world. So all three of the different shows there from the DC Universe service. What was interesting was Earth 2 was used for the upcoming Stargirl series, complete with some JSA members and such. What other shows did we see? We saw a few other things.
Well, we also had Brandon Routh's Superman.
Without the black
on
it, so a brighter, happier version of that. And one or two that I couldn't really tell quite what was. It might have been Krypton, actually.
There was one that I felt was kind of animated, which was probably a CGI Krypton.
It was a greenish kind of future city-ish thing. I couldn't tell what was.
Yeah.
So if that was supposed to be something else, it was lost on me. I'll probably check the IMDb page at some point, find out. So I thought that was a smart move because while having a combined CW universe makes sense, having a greater multiverse for things like the movies and other shows by other companies and stuff is a smart move.
Yeah.
It's going to happen anyways, so just lean into it.
Yeah.
So I think they kind of got the best of both worlds there. So I felt pretty much they landed the ending. There was, again, a couple of times of who's where and why, but when you're trying to mix this many people, that's kind of rough.
Mm-hmm.
I would have liked to have seen, at some point in the five parts, and I don't know when would have been appropriate, at least kind of a clip montage of all of the other heroes that have been in the CW universe.
Mm.
The Hawks, Firestorm, Captain Cold, etc. Who knows? Even Captain Cold could be back.
Yeah.
You know, they've opened that up. They also would have been nice to have addressed, do we get anybody surviving from Earth-X?
Mm.
You know, is it just that, because it's not that the merged Earth is just that from those of the characters there at the dawn of time, because we didn't have Black Lightning and any representative from his world.
Yeah.
And other than Barry, I don't know that we really had anyone who'd even met Black Lightning at that point. I guess they'd seen him on the ship.
Yeah.
But Barry was the one who'd interacted most with him. So I'm curious if we're going to get some crossovers a little bit more informally between the shows now that they're kind of situated to do that or not. And if we're at least going to get some name dropping here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, I think they landed the ending on this.
Yeah.
The tease for the Super Friends thing, maybe something will come of that. Maybe it won't, but that would be fun. If nothing else, winding up with a Zan and Jaina just to clean up that location and do something with it would be fun. Where they go from this moving forward, really don't know. This is going to be a hard act to follow in terms of a crisis or a crossover kind of a thing.
Yeah. I think in terms of second halves of the seasons, Supergirl has the most to deal with.
Oh, yeah. Complete status quo change for a number of things over there, particularly with the whole Luthor situation with Lena, at the very least, not to mention Lex looks like he could be recurring.
Yeah.
So that, again, big surprise. No clue where they're going to pick up on the Leviathan stuff.
Yeah.
But that something's got to happen on there. So definitely, I think there's a lot of status quo change there. For Arrow, the quote-unquote second half of the season is really two episodes, Backdoor Pilot and Epilogue.
Yeah.
So I'm curious how they do that. Flash, the lead up in this season had been the Bloodwork, I think was the villain.
Yes.
And then the whole Crisis stuff, played out. Bloodwork, honestly, I don't think is strong enough for remainder of season arc.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they go into for sort of a secondary arc to replace the Fear of Crisis arc they had.
I think it's a cleanup from Crisis with Nash.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Or just discovering how their world is different.
Mm-hmm.
And then Legends. It was interesting because when they were encountering the Bebo on Earth, there was a does so-and-so have the totem. The name they were using is the brother of Zavi or whatever, who'd been kind of the Isis equivalent. that switch had happened at the end of Legends series back that aired, what, in May or something.
Yeah.
So when that season kicks in, we're going to get their new status quo from what had already happened, plus the ramifications of Crisis. So they've got a little bit of a double whammy going on there. But I'll be surprised if there's any significant shift for Black Lightning other than acknowledging there are other heroes in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And you could argue they'd kind of waffled on that before and never really clearly stated either way. You could rewatch old episodes and it was, oh, these characters exist. Fine, that makes sense. You know, people wearing Superman shirts, is it because he's a comic book character like in our world or because he exists like he now does?
Yeah.
Plays either way.
Yeah.
So I don't have any problem with that. We've got the Superman show coming next season, I guess.
That sounds right, because it's been ordered to season.
Ordered to season. And then based on, again, the tacked on ending of these other worlds or other places, maybe we could cross over into the Earth 2 stuff at some point with the JSA. Actually, I'd love to see that for next year's crossover.
That'd be interesting. Yeah.
Because then you could basically do an Earth 1, Earth 2 sort of riff with the different sensibilities, depending, again, how they go for that show. I'm not even sure when that starts airing.
I don't know.
So I'm looking forward to that one, though, because I like the Earth 2 characters. So again, overall, I thought they did well. They respected the original source material. They played true to the basic plot line of it, whereas that was cleaning up, you know, 50-ish years of mishandled DC continuity in the comics. This was basically leveraging the 7-8 years of continuity in television,
mm-hmm.
allowing them to do some minor course corrections, but also to tell a fairly epic story.
Yeah.
And at some point, I do want to go back through these episodes and just kind of jot down the credits on some of these things at the beginning, because, man, it was just name after name after name after name when they were showing the guest stars and stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah, some of that's on IMDb, but part of it is just the order they're listed and who's credited and in what order type thing.
Well, and kind of how they're credited. Special appearance by, special guest star, just a guest star.
Yeah. I felt most of the guest stars from other non-CW shows were token cameo appearances, which is cool and I loved. But like the Titans didn't play any particular point in this. And again, they're relegated to their own world. What I found interesting is it's a different world than Doom Patrol, which I hadn't really expected because the Doom Patrol showed up in first season of Titans. So I'm not sure what's going on there. And we haven't watched second season yet. Maybe that'll clarify it. But there's a lot of story left to be told in this universe. This changes it without shattering it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a key difference between this Crisis and the one in the comics. The DC universe in the comics was never the same again, still isn't. And part of that is it got confusing as to, well, who knows what, when, who met whom, when, what was the original Justice League like? Could there be a Legion if it wasn't a Superboy? Those sorts of things.
Yeah.
Whereas here, it wasn't a matter of getting rid of redundant versions of Superman or something. It was more a matter of just integrating everybody into the same world.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not conflicting truths that had to get hammered out. If they had tried to get the Brandon Routh Superman into this world along with other stuff, that'd have been hard. But again, for the most part, when they were playing with toys from other sandboxes, the Smallville Superman, Lucifer, and things like that, they kept them, in some cases, integrated into the story, but also at arm's length.
Yeah.
You know, you could have taken that Smallville scene and replaced it with the Lois and Clark Superman, and it would have played out just the same.
Yeah.
I mean, a little difference in the nuances and the specifics, but the overall plot wouldn't have changed.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, overall, I was pleased. It was good. It was crowded. It was busy, but that's a good problem to have.
Well, and I think they, in terms of writing, they did some nice little things, like in the fourth episode, when Ollie tells the Anti-Monitor, you have failed this universe.
Yes, there was a couple of good lines like that. In the fifth part, when Canary's like, we will not fail this world.
Yes.
You know, they've got their catchphrases. They're not a ton of them, but they reference them and do them well. Even the nod to Bebo, it's like, you, that was off limits, you should know that by now kind of thing.
Yes.
And one or two lines from the legends about, oh, say it's a crossover sort of a thing. You know, and they acknowledge how they're treated as almost second-class citizens when it comes to crossovers.
Well, and I thought it was really funny that early in the five episodes, Mick ends up babysitting the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And there at the very end, Mick ends up babysitting, what'd they call it, Geek Team?
Mm-hmm.
And I was teasing you. I'm like, regardless of their age, Mick is the babysitter.
Yep. Yep. But he at least got to be in the episode.
That's true. That's true. And he was pretty well used in almost every episode he was in.
Yeah. A couple of times sidelined a little, but when he was there, he was well used. Steel and Ava, or Hank and Ava from Legends, barely used. Enough to acknowledge that they were in the episode, but...
Yeah. I mean, Mick at least got to be comic relief.
Yeah.
And he does it well.
I do want them to play in Legends on what happened to Captain Cold. Is he still dead? Is he not?
Yeah.
You know, does he have a shot at redemption or something like that? Or I don't know.
Well, and for that matter, having Leonard Snart as the AI voice on that wave wire was fabulous.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun. There was a lot of little things. I know when we were watching, I guess it was rewatching third part, that you were pointing out all the things they'd done to the Wave Rider that Mick had apparently done since he was living in it.
Yeah.
You know, the stereo over here, the weight stuff over there, the beers over there, that kind of stuff, which was... Again, just redressing the set.
Yeah.
Well, can add some stuff.
The first time we watched it, we were most of the way through the episode with the Wave Rider when suddenly you said, wait, where are the chairs?
Because
normally they're, what, the six, seven chairs. And that's why the second time we were watching, I'm like, you know, John said that the set was different because there weren't chairs. And you were right. When we wanted to sit, there weren't chairs.
I'm curious if we went back and watched last season of Legends, if they'd been there at that time or if they'd just gone away and we hadn't really noticed. Because it was a big deal how shaky the ship was and how you needed to be in the chairs first. And that just dropped away.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, and I don't recall if it was last season or the season before, but I remember at one point thinking that usually Sarah Lance gets in the pilot seat, sits down, straps in, and all the chairs behind her are empty.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, so we stopped all strapping in together?
And the thing is, they could have addressed that, and maybe they did and we missed it, with a simple line or two of dialogue of, yeah, they just didn't know how to go fix this one part. I fixed the stabilizer. It flies like a dream now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the inertial compensators or whatever, you know, they're working now.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, this time I was watching for, since the chairs weren't there, what else was different?
Yeah.
And they really had done a lot to make it, as Leonard Snart AI said, Mick was living in his car.
Well, and I think the fact that this was hopefully done before Legends season started gave them a little bit more opportunity to do those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it was mid-season for pretty much everybody else.
Yeah.
So, again, I'm curious where they go with this. I think they did a good job, and I hope they've got a good game plan for doing a crossover as good or better next year.
Yeah, me
and
too.
I feel they've been upping their game every season.
Yes, which on the one hand I love. On the other hand, it's hard to keep doing that.
Yeah, but I think they could do a couple of things now that they're on One World that would just be a little bit different. A joint Thanksgiving or Christmas party kind of a thing. Or something of that sort.
Yeah.
Just to get a little bit more cross-continuity and connectivity.
Well, one of the things I'd like to see them do before the Superman and Lois show starts up, because I think it'd probably be easier at that point in part, is have those characters go to Freeland, whether they're guest speakers at the school, they're there as the newspaper reporters writing an article, something.
Lois in there trying to get the story out about what's happening in Freeland.
I mean,
would be interesting.
There are prime opportunities, it feels like.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's one where having Lois, Iris, I'm trying to think if there's another reporter type that would be an interesting kind of, you know, meet up and do it in there.
Yeah.
And I think those two would be particularly interesting because I think a reporter with the notoriety and visibility of Lois Lane would get one story in Freeland. Maybe she's doing it from the government point of view or whatever. While Iris is sent in for the lesser known, she'll fit in better with that culture kind of.
Send in Nia Nall.
Mm, Yeah.
She comes from the all-accepting community. Everybody knows her as representing the why-can't-we-all-just-get-along contingent.
Those three going into the Freeland situation, getting their own angles on it, you almost do it as a clip show news report type episode of Black Lightning or whatever is told from their perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
But you see the same events told so very differently.
Yeah.
Based on what they come in with and how they would either fit or not fit in that culture.
Yeah.
Putting everything on the same world opens up those possibilities that they didn't have before. I hope they can leverage that while keeping each show solid and self-contained,
mm-hmm.
but benefiting from the shared continuity.
Yeah.
You know, do we ever see conversations alluded to between Gambi and Sisko now? Things of that sort.
Yeah.
There could be a lot of fun stuff. So I'm glad they went the route they did of splitting the difference between a unified world for their stuff and a multiverse to allow for all the rest.
Yeah. No, it's a good decision.
So we'll see how it plays out. And I'm looking forward to where these shows go this season. Looking forward to hopefully they do a clean ending on Arrow. And, you know, the Superman show coming in and whatever they've got, you know, in mind after that.
Mm-hmm.
There are times I wonder, would there be anything left on the CW if comic books weren't providing so much material for them?
But everybody loves heroes, whether or not they realize they love material that's sourced from comic books.
But even beyond these shows, Archie.
Yeah, true.
Katie Keene. There's a lot of things that are based on comic properties that don't fit the stereotypical superhero genre even.
True.
So it's cool to see this stuff get so widely accepted and for people to have everybody, you know, have some kind of a touchstone for what crisis means in the comic community.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see where they go from this. I do want to see that Hall of Justice thing get built up over the years. And hopefully the Gleek thing wasn't just a throwaway. So anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.